Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Isaiah chapter 47, which I will entitle The Humiliation of Babylon. This is a relatively easy chapter as Yahweh and Isaiah go off on the nasty Babylonian Empire. We start in verses 1 through 3 of Isaiah 47. Yahweh is speaking. He says, "Go down, sit in the dust, virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, daughter of the Babylonians. No more will you be called tender or delicate. Take millstones and grind flour. Take off your veil. Lift up your skirts. Bare your legs and wade through the streams. Your nakedness will be exposed and your shame uncovered. I will take vengeance. I will spare no one." Now, why does God call Babylon a virgin daughter? As John Gill says, quote, "The Babylonish monarchy called a virgin because it had never been subdued and conquered from the first setting of it up until it was conquered by Cyrus." She had never been violated, Babylon, until Cyrus came along. Also, she might have been called a virgin daughter because of Babylon's glory and beauty. She was a beautiful virgin daughter. But now she needs to sit on the ground without her throne because Cyrus is going to take her throne away from her. Cyrus invaded Babylon in 539 BC and destroyed it. Cyrus's troops did. So the daughter of Babylon is sitting in the dust. And we need to remember that daughter is the typical metaphor that's used to describe the population of a city. For example, the daughter of Jerusalem is mentioned a lot. So the population of the Babylonians, they're sitting on the ground. They're no more ruling because they don't have a throne. They're not tender or delicate anymore in their fancy houses. These Babylonian women, metaphorically speaking, of course, are going to take millstones and grind flour. A millstone was a big, flat stone with a little concave surface. And on top of that flat stone, there was another big flat stone with a convex surface, the convex part, reaching down into the concave part. The bottom stone would stay fixed, and the top stone, they would use animal power to move the millstone around to ground the flour, and the flour would come up in the hole in the top stone. Flour, of course, was put between the stones, and it was the work of slaves and oxen, very lowly work. And so what Yahweh is saying here is, you are degraded now, so take off your veil. You're not a princess anymore. Take off your veil. And then Yahweh says, lift up your skirts, bare your legs, and wade through the streams. Of course, if you're going to wade through a stream, you have to lift up your skirt and bare your leg if you're a woman. And the metaphor here means that Babylon, which was surrounded by many artificial rivers and streams, and to which Yahweh here makes an allusion, the daughter of Babylon is going to pass through those waters. This delicately reared and magnificently attired female, she's forced to ford a stream. What the metaphor means is that the power and magnificence of Babylon is being transferred to other places. Now, that doesn't mean that Babylon was carried off into captivity, as Barnes says. That never happened historically. According to Barnes, Benson says that actually Babylon was carried into captivity. I don't know how he gets that, but we do know that the Persians beat them in 539 BC, and Isaiah is predicting this by quoting the words of Yahweh. Your nakedness will be exposed. I'm not sure if that means the nakedness that is necessary to wade across the stream, or whether it means that they will be stripped and violated, your shame uncovered. That's what it sounds like. Sounds like she's being sexually violated. Perfect metaphor to describe the rape of Babylon by the Persians. And then God finishes up verse 3 and says, I will take vengeance, I will spare no one. Now, this nakedness metaphor is used by John in Revelation 17:16 when he's talking about the whore of Babylon, the whore of Babylon, which I believe refers to apostate Judaism, the same Pharisees and Sadducees who murdered Jesus. John says in Revelation 17:16, the 10 horns you saw and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked. That's the sea beast, the Roman Empire that hates the prostitute, the land beast, the whore of Babylon. This is when the Romans came in there in AD 70 and wiped out Israel, and Jerusalem became desolate and naked. So Babylon has actually become a poetic metaphor for destruction. That's what Cyrus was going to do to it. And then John's going to use that imagery later on to describe something else. We go now to Isaiah 47, verses 4 through 7. Isaiah is speaking now, probably. He says, "Our Redeemer, the Lord Almighty," is his name, and has to be Isaiah. It has to be Isaiah. "Our Redeemer, the Lord Almighty," is his name, "is the Holy One of Israel." Now he quotes God again here, according to the NIV punctuation. "Sit in silence. Go into darkness, daughter of the Babylonians. No more will you be called Queen of Kingdoms. I was angry with my people and desecrated my inheritance. I gave them into your hand, and you showed them no mercy. Even on the aged you laid a very heavy yoke. You said, 'I will continue forever, the eternal queen.' But you did not consider these things or reflect on what might happen." Now, Yahweh tells the Babylonians, the daughter of the Babylonians, the Babylonian population, to sit in silence. As John Gill says, Babylon used to be a place of noise and hurry, as well as famous and much talked of all the world over. But now there should be a deep silence in it, no voice to be heard, the inhabitants being gone, and no discourse concerning it. No more talked of and celebrated for its magnificence and authority, trade and riches, but buried in oblivion. So the population of Babylon is silent. It's gone into darkness. Darkness could be the darkness of a prison cell or the darkness of a coffin. Either way, it doesn't sound good for the Babylonians. In verse 6, Yahweh says, "I was angry with my people." Yes, Yahweh was angry with the Jews, and that's why they were carried off into captivity into Babylon. Notice that God did it. Verse 6 says, "I desecrated my inheritance." The Jews were said to be the inheritance of God, and yet God desecrated his own inheritance. God allowed profane Babylonians into the holy land, into the holy city, into the holy temple of Israel, and he profaned all of them using his agent, the Babylonians. For all of those who say that God cannot do evil, he can punish. And if you want to look at punishment as an evil, he can do plenty of that. Of course, actually, the punishment is harnessed into a greater cause, which is the establishment of righteousness. At the end of verse 6, Isaiah says, or Yahweh says through Isaiah, "Even on the aged, you Babylonians laid a very heavy yoke." We can read that in Jeremiah's book, Lamentations 5:12, which is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Jeremiah says this, "Princes are hung up by their hands, elders are shown no respect." Using Hebrew parallelism there, I suppose that the elders were princes and they were hung up by their hands, and that, of course, would mean that people who are relatively aged were hung up by their hands. That's a very heavy yoke, as Isaiah says in verse 6, Isaiah 47. In verse 7, Yahweh continues speaking to the Babylonians and says, "You Babylonians said, 'I will continue forever the eternal queen.'" The queen city, Charlotte, North Carolina, is called the queen city nowadays. Back then it was Babylon. John calls Babylon a queen in Revelation 18, verse 7. "As much as she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, give her that much torment and grief, for she says in her heart, 'I sit as a queen. I am not a widow, and I will never see grief. I sit as a queen.'" So Babylon's very famous for its sorcery, its wealth, its merchants, its power, its glory. God finishes verse 7 by saying, "But you Babylonians did not consider these things or reflect on what might happen." You didn't consider what things? You didn't consider the fact that you were being cruel to my inheritance, to my people, the Jews. Yes, I used you in order to punish the Jews, but I didn't mean for you to destroy them, and I'm going to punish you for what you did, even though you were carrying out my purposes. You didn't reflect on what might happen if you start persecuting my people. We go down to Isaiah 47, verses 8 through 11. God continues speaking to the Babylonians. "Now then, listen, you wanton creature, lounging in your security and saying to yourself, 'I am, and there is none beside me. I will never be a widow or suffer the loss of children.' Both of these will overtake you in a moment, on a single day, loss of children and widowhood. They will come upon you in full measure, in spite of your many sorceries and all your potent spells. You have trusted in your wickedness and have said, 'No one sees me.' Your wisdom and knowledge mislead you when you say to yourself, I am and there is none besides me. Disaster will come upon you, and you will not know how to conjure it away. A calamity will fall upon you that you cannot ward off with a ransom. A catastrophe you cannot foresee will suddenly come upon you. Now, in verse 8, God says that Babylon is a wanton creature. I like that translation, wanton. That means they're sexually loose. Babylon was especially known for venereal pleasures, according to John Gill, who says, quoting another gentleman named Curtius, no city was more corrupt in its manners or furnished to irritate or allure to immoderate pleasures. Parents and husbands suffered their children and wives to prostitute themselves to strangers so that they had but a price. Yea, every woman was obliged by a law to do this once in life, and that in a public manner in the temple of Venus, the impurities of which are at large described by Herodotus and Strabo. Imagine that, a law that says that your wife's got to prostitute herself once a year, or once in a lifetime. Well, once is enough, and publicly too. Yep, Babylon was a wanton creature. She lounged in her security. She was powerful for so long, for centuries. Nobody could touch her. I am, and there's none besides me. I'll never be a widow or suffer the loss of children. Well, yes, you were going to be a widow, and you're going to lose your children all in one day. And, of course, that day was at Belshazzar's feast, written about in the book of Daniel, which we will talk about when we get there. That's when Belshazzar, the regent of Babylon at the time, sees handwriting on the wall that says, many, many, tekel apharsin, I think it is, the handwriting on the wall, you're cooked, Babylon. In a single day. Now, this is being prophesied by Isaiah 150 years or more before the event happened. This is incredible prophecy. Now, all these disasters are going to come upon Babylon in spite of Babylon's many sorceries. Babylon was famous for sorceries. We read about the whore of Babylon in Revelation 9:21, and they did not repent of their murders, their sorceries, their sexual immorality, or their thefts. That's assuming that the people being spoken of in Revelation 9:21 are apostate Israel, which is the whore of Babylon, and that's an assumption that I make. These people were famous for their sorceries, the whore of Babylon. Babylon was famous for sorcery. Revelation 18, verse 23 says this, and Revelation 18:23 refers explicitly to Babylon. Verse 2, Babylon the Great, mentioned by name in Revelation 18. The light of a lamp will never shine in you, never shine in Babylon again, and the voice of a groom and bride will never be heard in you again. All this will happen because your merchants were the nobility of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery. So Babylon is famous for sorceries, sorcerers, wizards, necromancers, red hand ladies, fortune tellers, witches, warlocks. The place was overrun with demons. But it doesn't matter. Those demons aren't going to stop the destruction that's coming on Babylon. Verse 10, God says, you, Babylon, have trusted in your wickedness. What wickedness? Well, as John Gill says, your ambition and pride, your tyranny, your cruelty, your wicked arts of astrology, divination, and magic. Doesn't matter. You're going down. Those demons aren't going to save you. Babylon, you've said, no one sees me. Oh, yes. Well, God sees you, Babylon. He's omniscient. He can see everything. Your wisdom and knowledge mislead you when you say to yourself, I am and there is none besides me. Well, of course, Babylon is famous for their ancient knowledge. They were wise in statecraft and they were wise in sorcery. They were also wise in legitimate science and astronomy. Famous for that. Doesn't matter. They're going down. Verse 11, disaster will come upon you and you will not know how to conjure it away. Now, that's the NIV translation and there is a translation problem here. So let's look at some other translations. Evil shall come upon you, you shall not know, thou shalt not know from whence it riseth. That's the King James. Doesn't say anything about conjuring the evil away, which is the NIV, so there's a big difference in translation. If you take the KJV, you don't know where this evil is coming from. That would be Cyrus, and the Babylonians had no idea that the Persians would come after them. They had no quarrel with the Persians. Everything was cool, and all of a sudden, bang, there they come. Verse 11 says that Babylon could not foresee. At the end of verse 11, God says, a catastrophe you cannot foresee will suddenly come upon you. They had no idea that Cyrus was going to wipe them out like that. They were pretty secure in that city, walled city. They didn't think anybody was going to get them. Well, going back to verse 11, a translation issue, the disaster you will not know how to conjure it away, according to the NIV, or the disaster you don't know where it came from, according to the KJV. That seems to be the two possibilities. The ASV says, thou shalt not know the dawning thereof. The evil comes from where you don't know where it came from. The Bible in basic English says, because of this evil will come on you, which may not be turned away for any price, which is another different translation. God's Word translation says, evil will happen to you. You won't know how to keep it away, which is another way to translate it. The New American Bible says, upon you shall come evil. You will not know how to predict it. Another way to translate it, different meaning. The NASB has, but evil will come on you, which you will not know how to charm away. That's very similar to the NIV. You don't know how to conjure it away. Young's literal translation goes along with the KJV. And come in on thee hath evil, thou knowest not its rising. You don't know where it came from. All right, so this evil is coming on Babylon. Either they don't know where it came from, they don't know how to turn it away, even if they pay for it. They don't know how to keep it away. They don't know how to predict its coming. Hell, they don't know how to charm it away or conjure it away. Doesn't really matter. Now, at the end of verse 11, this calamity will be a catastrophe you cannot foresee and will suddenly come upon you. John Gill says that Aristotle reports that it was said that the third day after Babylon was taken, one part of the city did not know that it was taken, which is pretty amazing. It happened so fast, the news didn't even get out for 3 days or parts of 3 days. It happened so fast. Now, it's interesting and ironic that the Babylonians could not foresee the catastrophe coming upon them. Babylon was extremely famous for soothsayers who claimed to predict the future, but they couldn't predict the attack of the Persians. We go now to Isaiah 47, verses 12 through 15, and we will finish this chapter. God keeps berating the Babylonians. Keep on then with your magic spells and with your many sorceries, which you have labored at since childhood. Perhaps you will succeed. Perhaps you will cause terror. All the counsel you have received has only worn you out. Let your astrologers come forward, those stargazers who make predictions month by month. Let them save you from what is coming upon you. Surely they are like stubble. The fire will burn them up. They cannot even save themselves from the power of the flame. Here are no coals to warm anyone. Here is no fire to sit by. That is all they can do for you. These you have labored with and trafficked with since childhood. Each of them goes on in his error. There is not one that can save you. Now in verse 12, Yahweh ironically, sarcastically says, keep on with your magic spells and your sorceries. Perhaps you will succeed. Well, obviously, he doesn't think they're going to succeed. He's being sarcastic. Yahweh is. Again, one more example of God being sarcastic. Please don't tell me that the Bible does not have sarcasm in it. Don't tell me that God is not sarcastic. Don't tell me that the prophets are not sarcastic. Don't tell me that Jesus or Paul was not sarcastic. Lots of people were sarcastic in the Bible. Perhaps you will succeed. Well, no, of course they're not going to succeed. Perhaps you will cause terror. Now, that causing terror is a problematic translation. Let me give you some other translations. The New King James says, perhaps you will prevail. Well, that means perhaps you will succeed in parallel with the first part of that sentence. Perhaps you will succeed. Perhaps you will prevail. If you're causing terror, that's succeeding, so it's not that far off. The King James says, if so be thou mayest prevail, which means if so be, that means perhaps you may prevail. Bible in basic English says, maybe by all these sorceries you may put fear into your attackers. Darby says, with all these sorceries, if so be thou mayest cause terror, that means perhaps you may cause terror. NAB puts it in more modern English and says, perhaps you can strike terror. The New American Standard says, perhaps you may cause trembling. So either you're going to succeed or you're going to cause terror in your enemies. But either way, it's being said sarcastically by Yahweh because he knows that's not going to happen. After all, Yahweh says at the end of verse 9, the loss of your children and your king making you a widow, these disasters will come upon you in full measure in spite of your many sorceries. So God's already said you're not going to be delivered by your idols. So he's being sarcastic here when he says, perhaps you'll strike terror in your enemies. By the way, I failed to mention why Babylon was called a widow. In a single day she would be a widow. Well, a widow is someone who's lost her husband. And we might look at the children of Babylon, the population of Babylon, having lost their husband, their king. I guess that would be their father. I guess the queen of Babylon. Babylon is a queen. That's the better way to look at it. Babylon is a queen, but she's a widowed queen because her king is no longer there because Babylon has been wiped out. Now, in verse 13, Yahweh says, "The counsel you Babylonians have received has only worn you out." It hasn't caused terror to anybody. It's just worn you out. "Let your astrologers come forward, those stargazers who make predictions month by month." Why would stargazers, soothsayers, be making predictions month by month? Well, astrologers would make predictions about the weather for agricultural reasons, like our modern almanacs. Yahweh continues in verse 13, "Let these astrologers save you from what is coming upon you." And what's coming upon them is Cyrus in 539 BC. The Persians are going to wipe them out. It's ironic that the soothsayers interpreting the handwriting on the wall at Belshazzar's feast, they couldn't save Belshazzar. They could interpret what the words said, but they couldn't stop the onslaught of Cyrus's army. In verse 14, God continues to speak of the astrologers and the stargazers. "Surely they are like stubble. The fire will burn them up. They cannot even save themselves from the power of the flame." Now, after the astrologers get burned up, God says, "Now there are no coals to warm anyone. There's no fire to sit by." In other words, the astrologers burn, but they burn so completely, there's nothing left. There's no fire left, no coals left. They're so totally consumed by the flames. Verse 15, "That is all they can do for you. All these stargazers and astrologers can do. These you have labored with and trafficked with since your childhood." They've been messing with demons and the demons' apprentices. Ever since childhood, ever since the Neo-Babylonian Empire came into existence, which is 7th century B.C., each of them, each of these astrologers goes on in his error. There's not one that can save you. Now we have another translation issue here. Some translations say that everyone will go his own way or go to his quarter, and there will be no one that can save you. Now, Gill, Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, and Clark adopt that view because that's what the King James says, and they say what it means is that merchants shall go back to their home country after Cyrus destroys Babylon. So verse 15 would be read like this: "This is all they, the merchants, that have come into your country to trade with you. This is all they can do for you. Those you have labored with and trafficked with since childhood, you've been making money in international trade for a long time. Each of them goes back to his own country. There's not one of them that can save you." I don't like that view because it doesn't sound like it's reasonable to think that a merchant could save Babylon. It is reasonable to think that an astrologer could. And so I like this NIV translation, which says that those that you have labored with and trafficked with since childhood were not merchants, but were astrologers. And then each of those astrologers goes on in his error, and the astrologers cannot save you. Unfortunately, I can only find one translation that backed me up on that, the NIV. Those who say they go their own way, those translations are listed as follows: the King James, the American Standard Version, the Darby Version, God's Word Version, the New American Bible, the New American Standard Bible, and Young's Literal Translation. Now, of course, you could look at it this way. You could say, you've labored with these astrologers since childhood. Each of the astrologers, not the merchants, but each of the astrologers goes on back to his quarter, kind of hides in his house. He can't save anybody, so he just kind of disappears. You could look at it that way. But we get the general picture. Babylon cannot be saved, either by its own soothsayers or by its financial prosperity. They're going down. And on that happy note, because it is a happy thing to see the enemies of God defeated, we are now ready to turn to our next chapter, which is Isaiah chapter 48. I will entitle that chapter, "Israel is Refined for God's Glory." I hope you stay tuned for that discussion in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.